I'd like to welcome everybody back to this episode of GovCon Coffee and Issues. I'm Carol Bernard, CEO and co-founder of Govology. And again, with me today, we have our co-host, Michael Lejeune from RSM Federal. And we also have a special guest with us, Mr. Adam Austin from Totem Technologies, and they focus on cybersecurity. So that's going to be the topic of the show for today. Welcome back, Mr. Adam Austin. And Adam, thank you for returning.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
Yeah, hopefully you had fun the first time. So we're going to do it again. But this time around, with a little bit of a different twist, because there's been a couple of things that's happened since we last spoke. We're in the new year. Some new things have happened with regards to cybersecurity and the updates. And maybe for folks that don't know, because we're going to be talking about CMMC, both kind of level one and level two, just kind of like in a nutshell, you can talk about what those two are. Then we're going to kind of dive down a little bit more to try to understand who does it apply to. But specifically within this episode, I'd like to talk about micro enterprises, because you've got small mom and pop shops out there. Some of them may be doing very small services, that they're out doing some landscaping services or something of that nature, or maybe like the nice ladies that play piano at the VA. And so we want to talk about them too, because actually that was an issue we had at the VA when I was over there. They made the piano lady get registered as Sam. So let's kick it off, Michael. And what's been happening in CMMC since we last met? By the way, what is CMMC?
It's a good place to start.
Yeah. Let's expand acronyms. It's an acronym-rich environment. Yeah, so it's a cybersecurity maturity model certification that the DoD is spearheading in terms of federal agencies adopting, an accountability method to hold its supply chain accountable for implementing cybersecurity requirements to protect certain types of information. Those requirements already exist in contracts, and they have the clauses that go into contracts and then flowdowns have existed for at least 10 years. And the CMMC is just the method that the DoD will hold us accountable. We'll have to either self-assess, self-affirm, or in some cases get a third-party certification, kind of like an ISO 9001 or AS9100, an aerospace type of certification, but for our cybersecurity program. Because CMMC represents the DoD holding our feet to the fire, it's gotten a lot of attention of late, and the DoD published the format of the CMMC framework in December at the end of last year. And so it's getting a lot more publicity and it's on a lot more folks' radar, but the requirements to actually protect this information have been around for a long time. For most of us, it really shouldn't be anything new, but for a lot of us, it's the first time we're hearing about it. Or if we're spinning up a business and trying to enter into the government federal contracting space, you're going to start hearing about this more and more.
And so CMMC is specific to the government, but it's not the only place where contractors may need to be aware of cybersecurity requirements within various contracts that they have with other agencies in the federal government, even at the state and local level, because everybody seems to be really understanding and realizing that this is an important thing to ensure that contractors are, one, protecting the information that they're being trusted with to protect, but number two, trying to prevent folks from getting into certain systems.
Yeah, that's right. We can see it when we look at Chinese technology, not just military technology, but manufacturing technology, research and development. Part of their MO is copycat, steal intellectual property and use it for their own so that they can save on research and development costs and not have to put the legwork into building efficient manufacturing and distribution and technology systems. They steal that information. And China is but one example of adversaries that do that. And it's just quite apparent, the Chinese, and we're in a sort of technological and business race with them now. But there's all types of sensitive information across federal government at state levels as well. So we're starting to see a lot more states put cybersecurity requirements into state and local government contracts. Also, privacy requirements. Most states now have a privacy protection requirement for all businesses, and especially those that do business with the state. Cybersecurity is an enabler of privacy as well. So yeah, the tide has turned in terms of governments forcing their supply chain to protect data, and then those best practices sort of trickling down through the rest of industry across the board. So it's not going away. Cybersecurity is not going away.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's just a risk mitigation area for the government. So it's very beneficial for everybody to really understand where it applies to them, where it does not apply. We'll talk a little bit about some of that in this particular episode today. But where exactly are we right now? Because for the past several years, you've come on to Govology and have done a webinar called the Evolving Cybersecurity Requirements. So when we speak specifically to DoD and CMMC, it's been something that's kind of been going on for a while. It's not like all of a sudden they've come out and they're like, hey, here's the program. Here's how you certify at level one. Here's how you certify at level two. There's also a level three, correct?
There will be a level three. Okay. Yeah.
So where are we with all of this right now? I mean, if we're not there where it's official yet, how far out are we from that being official?
Yeah, it can seem like Groundhog Day when it comes to CMMC, because we're now in the fifth year of the DoD rolling out the CMMC program. I have to stress, the requirements have always been in contracts.
Yeah.
This is just the accountability method.
Is that the point where we hear that where contractors, when this becomes a thing, because right now they already are supposed to kind of comply with the regulations that apply to it.
Yeah.
But when it does become a thing, is it something that they're going to be like coming to your doorstep and certifying you for these levels? So that's kind of the second part of the question, but it's still, where are we with the actual, we're good to go now. Level one, level
the
two.
Line, when is the line in the sand?
Right.
Or how far away is that line? Yeah, right now we're in this paradigm where just by virtue of signing the contract or making an agreement with a customer, we're attesting to the fact that we have all these cybersecurity protections in place, like antivirus on computers, physical security on the buildings if we handle paper media with certain types of information. That's all self-attestation right now, but those days will be coming to an end for many of us. Tens of thousands, maybe more like hundreds of thousands of us in the DoD supply chain will have to have an independent verification of that self-attestation, and we'll have to pay for that. And the reason why CMMC is so fraught is because in a lot of cases, this will be a very expensive endeavor for us to pay, for instance, for that third-party certification, legwork to gather all the compelling evidence that will help us pass an assessment. So it's not going to be cheap in a lot of cases. And in terms of where we are, I mentioned DoD published the rule that outlines the CMMC framework. That was the end of December. There was a 60-day period of public comment, which ended in February 26th. Now the DoD has to adjudicate or address all those public comments before the framework becomes official, before we start seeing requirements and contracts and subcontracts and flowdowns to actually go get certified. The DoD has to formalize and finalize the framework, as well as the adjustments that need to be made to the contract language that can go into contracts. And that will take some time. There were 787 comments submitted on the rule. We submitted a comment at Totem Tech. Our comment was 2 pages. It had 11 questions and a suggestion. And I think we're probably on the lighter side of comments that were submitted. I know one submitter submitted a 64-page comment on the rule. So one of those 787 comments is 64 pages long, and the DoD has to address all of this stuff. Yeah. So it's going to take some time. The earliest that most of us will probably face CMMC, at the very earliest, it would be like quarter one, calendar year 2025, before we start seeing it in contracts and it being a real thing and we could actually go get certified. More likely, you're talking about mid part of 2025, so June, July, before it's a reality. It's the framework is constructed in such a way that it will be phased in over time, starting with new contracts, and then program managers have the option to put requirements in option years. And as you mentioned, there's these three levels and the phases depend on the level. It's a little bit complicated, but it is all laid out in the framework, but the DoD has some work to do, and it's probably a year plus before most of us see it. But we'll get to this. Like, it can take some of us a year plus to actually implement these requirements and get to the point where we'll pass an assessment. And we have clients like this. I think this is quite a prevalent attitude across the supply chain for the federal government, is like, oh, well, it's a year away. I have time to wait before it affects me. First of all, I'll reiterate, the requirements are already in your contract or in your subcontract or your reps and certs to your customer. And if you haven't been paying attention to those requirements, it takes a while to implement all the stuff. So there's no time. There's really no time to wait.
You know, when you talk about it, it really makes me think of, on a simpler level, the way that the government for years did the small socioeconomic business certifications, where at one point in time, it was like, hey, here's the rules, and you can self-certify. But of course, what did everybody do? If you served in the military, you probably ticked the box, I'm a veteran-owned business, without really reading the actual requirements that stated that you got to be 50% and all of this other stuff. So that's where, when there was no certification program out there and contractors were self-certifying, there was constant non-compliance with those clauses, sometimes really kind of unintentional because the contractors just didn't go the extra step to really read and understand what they had to comply with when they ticked the box. But then some was just outright fraud where they basically just lied, said like, yeah, we're good. But that was not the case. And when the investigation happened, some of these folks actually went to prison and had to pay a lot of back fines when they received contracts under that representation that they made. And then finally, the government slowly and surely started requiring official formal certifications. The last of them was the woman-owned small business. So now you can tick the box, but you got to go the extra mile to actually get a formal certification, which is now done all at the SBA. So it seems like we're kind of in that workup process right now where it's like, still, there's the requirements in the contract. You got to be responsible. And at the end of the day, if the government goes to audit you and you are not in compliance, you can still get in a lot of trouble for not having complied with it. Now, later on, what they're trying to do is develop a formal certification program because they know that anytime that they're going to leave it as a self-certification, it's not going to be given the importance and the attention the compliance that it needs to have.
That's so exactly right. That's a great analogy. The Department of Justice, in fact, is threatening the False Claims Act and has actually begun civil and criminal prosecutions using the False Claims Act for those of us that falsely attest to our cybersecurity compliance. The bigger problem is probably just benign negligence. Like, how many times do you and Michael say this to your clients? Read your freaking contract. You have to understand the contract in detail and everything that's in there. And many of us just don't do the legwork to read everything.
Yeah, that's true. And even before that, when you register as SAM, you're representing a lot within those representations and certifications starting out there. And so there's a lot. And it's very important that you really do take the time to understand what you're signing off to. Because at the end of the day, the government comes knocking on your door. It's like, hey, man, you signed the box. You ticked the box and you signed that you like had read these certifications. So
you can go to jail.
Absolutely.
And it's a privilege to be able to be part of the government industrial base. Like, you're going to be providing goods or services to the greatest nation on the planet. So it's like, you got to take that privilege seriously.
Michael, I know you've got a lot of contractors you work with these days. I mean, what are some of the questions that they've got about?
Yeah, I'll say the number one question today is, what is that again? And why do I need to know about it? You talk about Groundhog Day, Adam. I think you and I have been on enough podcasts and episodes here and everywhere else to totally feel like Groundhog Day. I'm like, should I ask him that question again? But yet a lot of people don't know this exists. Probably 8 out of 10 of our brand new clients have no idea what this is, what's going on. And the concern for a lot of them is, so what if Q1 next year is also Groundhog Day? So like we've gotten to the point now where people are like, man, stop crying wolf on this thing. We've been dragging it out for, like I said, 5 years. And for 5 years, it's been this summer, coming soon this summer, you know, to a contract near you, right? For 5 years. And now we're looking at a 6 year. And so I think that's the challenge in the market right now is the complacency to say, look, man, we know Groundhog Day is coming. We know there's almost 800 comments on this thing. And depending on what direction this goes, are there going to be lawsuits? What's going to happen on the back end of this, depending on what's in those thousands of pages? Because I've got to assume there's thousands of pages for them to read through. Are they going to make yet another change to the model? Yeah. And so the fear right now is, let's say I do pay $100,000 and come January, February, that's no longer applicable, or it's kicked down the road, or they just rewrite a section of the FAR and say, okay, we're going to call this a day and move on. Kind of like, you know, what we've seen with some of the aircraft. They're just like, was it the Osprey or whatever, where they're just dumping billions of dollars and they're like, eh, we're done with this. We're going to walk away, right? It's like, this is coming and then it's not. So like, we know cybersecurity is not going anywhere, but I think that's the challenge for a lot of people on the ground of, how far do I go down the rabbit hole given the Groundhog Day that's going on, or maybe it's the groundhog hole. How far do I go down it, given what's happened in the last few years, even though it's imminent, right?
Yeah.
That's the challenge for a lot of people. And then what we were talking about beforehand on the, so where's it going to apply? How does it affect me? I don't sell this. I do sell that. I'm a small company. I'm always going to be small. I'm always going to be under simplified acquisition. All my other buddies who are in technology are going for the level two or level three, but I really only need level one. So I think there's still just enough confusion in the market that I honestly don't think a lot of people are going to do anything.
Even when they know about it, they'll still just drag their feet.
Yeah. I see the hammer dropping in Q1 or Q2 of next year and people still going, eh, you know, there's going to be a healthy amount of the population that still do that simply because of the skepticism. And so like we've been talking about the prep, but like, I mean, I was on the CMMC website the other day and I like how they've gone from five levels to three. I think that's nice, but I feel like I'm fairly educated and I'm like, so where's the checklist? Like, how do I find a plain English checklist for level one? And I think if there's anything like we could do for the market, it would be to find that and publish it, make sure it's out there, which I'm sure it's out there somewhere, but it's like making sure that is clear so people can start that part of the process. Because right now what you have, whether it's you read the FAR or anything else, and it's like, man, this doesn't seem like English to me. I don't understand what's going on. So I think that would be nice to have something that's widely available.
Well, you kind of set up a softball for me there, Michael, because that's why Totem exists. That's why Totem Tech exists, is to provide translation interpretation for our peers. And we're a micro business ourselves, subcontractor and DoD supply chains ourselves, daughter company of another micro business that's an Air Force prime contractor. So let me circle back to the first part of that. The legitimate concern from clients that like it is Groundhog Day and the certification, the CMMC part of it will never come. Or it'll just be kicked down the road again. That's, I think, a legitimate concern. The CMMC program has been fraught from the beginning with conflict of interest, with huge price tags, delays, changes to the model, inadequate communication and publication on the part of the Pentagon. But I'll reiterate, the requirements already exist. And CMMC is just the accountability, the independent certification that you're doing, what you're already supposed to be doing, what's already in contracts. And we can talk about the clauses and the various levels and which contracts they get, the requirements get into. So yeah, you could adopt the attitude that CMMC is not something that I'm worried about right now, but you need to be worrying about what's in your contract, or we need to as government contractors, because there's already clauses in there. The vast majority of us already have some requirements for protections. The federal government's ramping up the protective mechanisms for whistleblowers and actually encouraging whistleblowers with percentages of the fines that the government recoups from False Claims Act prosecutions. The whistleblower actually gets a percentage. And then there are sort of independent Department of Justice prosecutions of the False Claims Act when it discovers negligence and fraud. So there are mechanisms that the government is threatening to use and ramping up to be able to prosecute these false claims independently of whether or not there's this CMMC accreditation or certification is the better word, certification process. So I would still advise, even though CMMC is fraught, we still have obligations. The CMMC site from the DoD CIO's office where it shows the old model, the new model. So they've simplified the model a little bit. They're making it more approachable. The fact that the DoD has taken into account some of the hand-wringing and consternation that we in the community expressed 4 years ago, 5 years ago when they first rolled it out, I think means that they're not going to be backing away. They're making changes to the model that they can actually implement it. And so those are signs that it's not going to go away. It might be delayed.
Just a matter of when.
And we have these obligations anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that needs some clarity too is around like recouping the cost. That was something early on in all this was, hey, if this is going to cost as much as $100,000, which is what the number that was originally thrown out there, if it's going to cost that, and I'm a $1 million company, that's probably all of our profit for the year.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the neighborhood of that, maybe more. And so having that clearly addressed on what it's going to look like. Because, you know, if I go in a $100,000 contract, you're probably not going to recoup all 100 on that contract, are you? Or a portion of it, or like, so yeah. Like having that clearly spelled out for contractors so they know. It's like, if I'm going to do something at a smaller level and I know how the reimbursement works, I can plan for that. I can work around that. And today it's kind of a like, well, you know, you can spread that out or like whatever, right? It's very fuzzy on how that's going to work. I don't even know if that's still in the current discussions. You may know that.
Reimbursement is no longer on the table.
Yeah. So they're not, so contractors are no longer going to get reimbursed for dropping $100,000 on this.
No, the DOD dropped that language in 2021. You used to be able to get reimbursed for the cost of the assessment of the cost of the certification, which that estimate now has ballooned just for the certification at level 2 for the protection of controlled unclassified information. The cost of certification, the DOD estimates at $100,000. That's not implementation of all the requirements, just the certification. They did away with the reimbursement language. Now it's allowable, so you can add it to overhead.
Yeah. Okay. You can claim it just in another way. So what about like level 3? Do you have an estimate on what level 3 certification is going to cost? Is it around the same or is it going to be?
No, it's an order of magnitude higher. So DOD's estimates for the cost of certification the first time through on level 3 is 2.something million and something like 500,000 in annual recurring costs to sustain the implementation.
And is that money goes to the certification company that does it, right? So like companies like yourself and other companies can get certified to do the certifications. Is that correct? Or are they going to do that?
That's correct. But that's only at level 2, where you'll be hiring a third party certification assessment organization to provide the certification. So there's level 1. Certain types of information. You do self-assessment and self-affirmation. Level 2 is for those of us that handle controlled unclassified information. We can go down the rabbit hole of explaining like the differences between these information if we want, but this is generally information of technical nature, generally above and beyond your average like federal contract information, communications related to the contract itself. When you start handling unclassified technical information, you're at level 2. At this level, you will have to hire that independent third-party assessment organization to assess you and provide you a certificate. At level 3, which is for those contractors and those supply chain members that handle what I call CUI plus, which is controlled unclassified information of a technical nature related to critical weapons programs, hypersonics, missile defense, nuclear arsenal upgrade. A very few contractors, like fewer than 2,000, will be at this level out of hundreds of thousands in the industrial base. In addition to that, hiring that certifier at level 2, you'll have to pay $100,000 or so for that certification. The government comes in and does a delta assessment between level 2 and level 3. You don't pay the government anything. It's an office under the Defense Contract Management Agency. You don't pay them anything, but you'll have to implement a whole other set of protections, what were known as advanced or enhanced protections to protect that critical unclassified information. And the government will issue that delta certification. So the cost of implementation and preparing for the government certification between level 2 and level 3, the DOD is estimating at $2.3 million. And so you're right, like 10% of $1 million revenue gone on assessment. That's most of our profit. You're totally right. The Department of Defense is expecting attrition, mergers and acquisitions to result from the costs of implementation and certification. They have stated that assumption and that expectation in their publications.
Have you seen their, they did a, gosh, I don't remember what the document was called. It's like a small business report that they put out. I believe it was not this past January, but like last January, February timeframe. And so in 23, and it was kind of like their strategic plan for DOD. And like they acknowledged in there that the industrial base was shrinking. They had a goal to increase it, but like, here's 15 things we're going to do that's probably going to cut it in half. You know? You know, it's like the irony of, hey, our goal is to do this, but we're going to just slaughter the base with some of these things that we're going to do. I can see how a lot of people will just say, this was already too difficult. I'm just going to leave the market, which on one hand opens doors for a lot of people that stick around in the market that say, hey, we're going to make the investment and we are going to stick around, because if there's less companies, there's less competition. And so I can see the pros and cons of that and how that may shake out. Do you see on like the level two, a situation where there becomes a self-assessment for that one, and then we're just doing the other thing on level three, or two is probably just always going to be an outside party coming in?
No, actually the framework allows for certain contractors that handle CUI and need a level two to do a self-assessment. But the DoD estimates there will only be about 5% of us, about 4,000 companies out of the 80,000 plus that will need a level two certification. Only about 4,000 of us will be afforded that self-assessment. We certainly handle CUI on both of the companies, our parent company and Totem Tech, and we're prepping for a level two certification. Actually have to go hire that third party. We're not going to assume that.
You can't do it yourself, even though you get certified.
Yeah. So we're assuming worst case scenario and planning for that.
So I think a lot of people, they hear about a lot of this stuff and they still gloss over on, so what is this again? And when I'm talking to people, it's like at the different levels, you go from mostly policy and procedures to equipment and software is probably a really simple way to break this out. Where at one level, it's like, how do you handle documents? Like actually having documented policies, procedures, and making sure people are using them, right? That's one of those things that, you know, you don't just have people. You got, you know, Janice over in accounting who's like, I don't care about that. I'm not using that. I'm just going to put this in my Google Drive because it's easier for me to work from home that way, right? But like the policies and procedures, making sure people are using. And then there's the technology and equipment that I have to actually go through all of this. Some of it could be as simple as filing cabinets that lock, doors that lock, right? Things like that. So it's protected. But also the firewall software and other different things that are going on. Can you talk a little bit about that for the folks that are like, I hear cybersecurity and like, hey, you know, we all change our passwords and we're using secure webs. Like, we should be able to pass. So give us a little bit of info on that.
You should be able to pass, but I have issue as a small business owner. I think the requirements that the federal government and Department of Defense have put out there they're too much. And we should have implemented a true maturity model where you have simple things like endpoint protection, multi-factor authentication, and you're good to go at level one and a significant way to level two, but it's not that way. It's not set up that way. And I think I see the technology versus policy procedures thing a little bit differently, Michael. So at all three levels, when I look at the controls, I've been looking at the controls a long time. And in my mind, they're about 50% at all three levels, 50% policy and procedures that, so stuff you have to do as an organization to develop a cybersecurity culture and some sort of muscle memory for how cybersecurity is done. And then 50% technology or tangible things that help enforce those policies, whether it's a piece of equipment or like a lock on a door, like you're talking about. So at all three levels, I see that 50% split. We can talk about it at level one. So all federal contractors, no matter what, with the lone exceptions of commercial off-the-shelf products and below the micro-purchase threshold, those are the only two exceptions. But all federal government contractors will see the FAR 52-204-21 clause in solicitations and contracts and expected to be flowed down. And the DoD will require a CMMC level one self-assessment for that clause. And within that requirement, there's a sort of spectrum of cybersecurity protections that we have to put in place that range from physically protecting the building with locks on doors and windows, and in most cases, like badged access readers or key codes, not leaving doors to the facility unlocked, closing up garage bay doors on warehouses, those sorts of things. One end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is logical digital access control, requiring a username and password to log into a laptop. And then in between, there are other technological requirements as well as policy and procedure requirements sprinkled throughout that spectrum. For instance, you're required to have endpoint protection on all of your endpoints, antiviruses. You're required to use a firewall, even at level one. You're required to do vulnerability scans, which involves technology that most small businesses don't by default have in place. It's relatively cheap or cost-effective technology, but it's not a typical consideration for a small business. You're talking about technology. You're also talking about policies and procedures. So you're required to have an acceptable use policy for your staff that identifies who within the staff is allowed to publish corporate information publicly, like on websites, social media, identifies who can do that, restricts everyone else from doing that, and requires the company to introduce a sort of training and review policy to make sure that no federal government information accidentally spills. So that's a policy type of thing. No technology is needed there, but it's policies and procedures. So you're required to develop a policy on how you handle sanitization and destruction of paper, shredding, burning, recycling. So that could be met through policies and hiring out a shredding company. So you have this mix, and it's about 50-50, and that's true for all three levels. So that's how I see it. The difference between the levels is the number of things that you have to do within policy and technology and procedures. At level one, you have 17 things you have to do. At level two, you have 110. At level three, you have 134. So it's this order of magnitude increase in the number of things you have to do as opposed to a difference between policy and technology at each level. That's how I see it.
Yeah, that's a really good breakdown. I think for a lot of folks, as they're going through and they start looking at that list, that's where, like you said earlier, the investment's going to come of we don't have these things installed in our facility, whether it is the right door locks or badge readers, or when I was at one company, we didn't have authenticators on our phone. You had the little key fob thing you carried around that, and you know, with the rolling codes. And so like all of those things cost money and they all require subscriptions and different things. And so having to implement that stuff to make sure you're compliant is where a lot of people, I think, are going to struggle initially out of the gate of, well, I think we handle it really well. Oh, well, you really only check 11 of the 17 boxes.
Yeah.
If you really were to assess this the way it is. So no, it's all really good information. And I think that's why we keep having you on Groundhog Day to come back and talk about this stuff. Cause it's almost a full-time job keeping up with what's going on and the changes and trying to predict the future a little bit on where this thing is headed. And it's a serious topic. You know, the other part of it for folks is, so DOD is first and then the rest of the government. You know, like you said, there's still clauses everywhere, but as far as the hammer of CMMC, that's where a lot of people are dragging their feet too. They're, oh, well, I'm not going to do business with the Army or whatever. I'm not too concerned about that. So I think that's where the market needs a little bit of education or constant education on is coming to a neighborhood near you, regardless of where you're doing business. It's just when. Right.
It's just when DOD is the tip of the spear, and that's typically how it is.
Well, man, this is great information, Adam. And before we get to the Q&A part, ask you to talk about the couple of workshops, because you've got a couple of CMMC workshops coming up. We've got a CMMC level one workshop. And in fact, we posted that right on the page of Govology. And I think I put a picture that probably kind of sums up what the way most contractors are dealing with CMMC right now. So if you could see that little screenshot, you know, so unfortunately, that's not a good posture to be in. So can you talk about like these two workshops that you've got? What am I looking at in terms of, and I know some of this will be dictated by looking at kind of like solicitations within the contracts that you want to do, because that's where the clauses are. And you can go back and look at historical, maybe to see what has been historically there, but just kind of like in a nutshell, like if I wanted to say, all right, let's just go ahead and get level one done. So we could kind of start, at least we're making progress to it. I'll learn a lot more about protecting data and things of that nature, and then maybe going up to level two. So you've got the CMMC level one workshop, which is at the homepage of Govology for folks that want to get to that one. And then you've got the second one. So can you talk about the first one first, the level one workshop? And then we also have a deadline for that, because that starts on April 8th.
Yeah. Yeah, and we really appreciate the opportunity to team up with you all, Carol, and host these workshops. So Michael said it perfectly a few minutes ago, where he was like, most of us go into the self-assessment or reading through these clauses, and we think we're in better position. Our company is in better cybersecurity position than it actually is. And we might think we're 17 out of 17 at level one, like we have physical security, we have the endpoint security. But we really don't. And when you dig into how the government expects us to do the box checking, like the self-assessment, we might end up only at an 11 out of 17 or an 8 out of 17. So what level one is, The workshop is explaining in layperson's terms what the requirements are. This is Totem's business model. This is what we're all about. This is our mission. Explaining in layperson's terms, translating and interpreting what it is the government's asking us to do and equipping you with the tools to perform that granular check at the level that the DOD and really a federal government at level one expects us to do the check. So we train you in the workshop how to do that self-assessment using the tools that we have. And we built our company around a cloud-based sort of checklist platform that provides all the interpretation, provides a workflow and a mechanism that allows a company to do the self-assessment, which is going to be required at level one. And then plenty of time in the course of the workshop to ask questions where there's still some gray area or the terms are ambiguous or nebulous, and you as a potential or current government contractor still don't understand. It's a 3-week long workshop, a couple of hour time commitment each week, so not too burdensome. We spread it out over 3 weeks to make it more approachable, and plenty of time. In fact, there's a full 1 hour Q&A session each week, what we'll call return and report call, where you get to come and ask any questions that you have about specifically how to implement these requirements at your organization. I'll just give a for instance. So I mentioned this requirement that you have doors and locks on your windows at your facility, if you operate a facility. We find all the time, especially in nice climates like Southern California, where there's a huge government industrial base, that they have locks on the doors and windows, but they don't use them. They have the doors and windows and garage bay doors wide open all the time because the weather's nice and it's nice to have breeze through for the line workers that are operating the machines or running the forklifts and loading and shipping and receiving. Like, it's nice to have that breeze through. So you have the mechanism available to you as an organization, but you're not using it. That's not going to pass an assessment, because I could easily dress up in a UPS outfit or even put on some company swag, like a polo shirt for that company, and pose as an adversary and walk right in, walk out with some of the sensitive government information. And so even though we might have the mechanisms in place, we often find ourselves needing to be retrained to actually use those mechanisms. And so it's that kind of subtle and nuanced understanding of what's going to be required of us that we break down in the level one workshop for all 17 of the requirements.
Yeah. Awesome, man. I'm actually looking forward to it, because this is the first time you broke it out on the level one. And before we had the level two, which is really great as well. That's a 9-week workshop. And
that's 9 weeks.
A little bit more. What I love about the workshops that you're doing is that, like, you're learning, you're applying and implementing as you go along. And then you've got like the expert at there, Adam, where it's like, I'm sure Adam, if they were to hire you on a one-on-one consulting basis, it probably would be more expensive for them on your hourly rate. Whereas like where you do it in the series, they could save a little bit of money by basically being on the group calls where you can talk to everybody. And then everybody kind of gets the benefit of hearing the discussion. And it's like, oh yeah, you know, I had that question, but I didn't want to ask it too.
Yeah. There's a lot of that. Yeah, awesome. We call it a cohort. You're with a group of like-minded individuals participating together, getting our hands dirty, so to speak, implementing these requirements.
When is the deadline for that one we're putting on there?
It kicks off April 8th, so last registration will be, let's see here, I got to pull up my calendar, the 5th of April. So you have 10 calendar days.
Awesome. Well, that's on our homepage. If you guys want to check that out at govology.com for the CMMC level one, I would encourage everybody to actually take that program. I'm definitely going to be participating as much as I can inside of that as well, because I've already actually ran up across a state contract. So this is the other side that probably would be helpful to know for someone, is that I've already run up against a state contract that actually has some of their own requirements built into it, which was not applicable to our business. And what you might find is that you get a contract from an agency that's using boilerplate language, and maybe they're using the wrong type of clauses in your contract. And you also have to be able to know when to say, look, I'm not going to be getting access to your systems, so this really doesn't apply to me. And there's opportunities where you can go back to the agency and say, can you remove this requirement from this contract? And they can take that to whoever their risk manager is or whatever. And a lot of times, if it doesn't apply, they can take it out. Whereas you don't want something to apply where it doesn't have to apply to begin with, especially when you're looking at something serious of this nature.
Yeah, inexpensive.
So
And
I
we
could
have
see.
successfully helped, I'll say, a couple handfuls of clients, euphemistically say, open up that channel of communication and get it in writing that these particular clauses don't apply to them. There's no such thing as a self-deleting clause from a contract, but that is the negation of that clause if you have it in writing from your customer that it doesn't apply.
That's a good thing to know too. So we're excited about that one. The level two is also on Govology. If you guys just want to go to govology.com/CMMC, you can read all about that workshop, what's included in there. So for those of you guys who think that you might need to go to that next step, that would be another great workshop, a little bit more in depth. But man, I'm so glad that you're doing these and that you're out there to really try to do your best to make as much as you can as affordable as possible to the small businesses out there. We really didn't get too much time to talk about the micro enterprises that sometimes it's like doesn't matter really. It's like if you're a one person shop, if you got the requirements, you got to comply with it. So you got to figure that out for yourself and make your decision on whether or not you're going to decide to do business with the agency at that level. No, this is great, Michael, and I know we're getting close to our hour here, but I'd like to go to some questions. But do you guys have anything that you'd like to share before we break to go to Q&A?
Our blog that does an overview of the CMMC framework. I would
Oh, cool.
encourage the audience to read that. It breaks down, it's a synopsis of what's a 200 some page document that the DoD published, and we condensed it down into a few scrolls and a web page. Goes through the price, estimated costs for all this stuff, and the phased implementation as well. So anyone that's interested more in what's coming down the pike for CMMC certification, I would encourage them to check that out.
And we'll get those posted. Or if you guys are watching this on demand, just reach out to us at support@govology.com and we can kind of get those links to you as well as the links for the two workshops that Adam does. And so with that, let's break for this episode of GovCon Coffee and Issues. I really, again, Adam, thank you so much for joining us again. And Michael, thank you for also participating and sharing some of your thoughts and questions, some great dialogue that we had in this session today. So, again, thank you all for participating. We'll take a few questions. So, I'm going to open the Q&A box. First question we've got here, Adam, is false claim, maybe this is a comment, false claim and whistleblower will be the hammer behind CMMC. So, I guess what you really don't want to do is not comply and then make your employees angry.
Right.
Pay your
So,
employees well.
the government's got to pay that national debt somehow, so they got to
yeah.
collect some money. Hey, Carol, we have the book launch today,
Yeah, man.
so I got to get off and hop on another thing. So I'll leave folks with this real quick. My new book just dropped today. You're new to government contracting and you don't know where to start. This book is actually that question, right? It answers it in very much detail. But yeah, if you want to grab this today, it's just $9.95. It'll be that price today only, and it's like $25 after that. So go get it 60% off. So
Michael's
where's the
books are
link?
awesome.
It's a great book, and thanks for the endorsement, Adam. I'll reach out to you about one of the next books we have coming out in later this year. So cool.
Sounds
All
good.
right. All right. We got a couple of more questions that we'll take here. I'm a startup SDVOSB small operation. Is there a Q&A checkoff list that I can use to at least have a semi-official inventory of what I have? In other words, as I check off the list that I know I'm adhering to.
Yeah, we have several types of checklists available for download from our free tools page. There is an inventory spreadsheet in there that you can use to take account of all of the assets, the IT assets that you have. There also is a CMMC level one checklist available. I mentioned that we built our company around this cloud-based platform that has all of the requirements and all of the assessment objectives listed in that. We offer free trials to that as well. 30-day free trials, and that you, as part of the workshop, I should have mentioned this, Carol. For the duration of the workshop, you get access to that tool and training in how to use that tool. So while the workshops aren't free, you will 100% get the value out of the workshop just from understanding all the resources that are out there that are free and how to use those particular resources.
Awesome. Again, guys, if you want to raise your hand and actually come on and ask your question live, we invite you to do that at this time. A couple more questions in the Q&A box here. Where can we find these action items in relation to CMMC levels?
Yeah, so ultimately, the requirement for the protection of the information, the federal government has adopted standards that are published by NIST, the National Institutes of Standards and Technology. And there's one in particular, the 800-171. Those are the standards that we have to implement with the list of cybersecurity practices that we have to put in place to protect information, the controlled unclassified information. The DoD supplements on top of those and publishes something called assessment guides. And those were at the DoD CMMC model. You can find assessment guides as well as scoping guides on the DoD's websites. But something to know is that in the 800-171 standard published by NIST, that actually encapsulates all of the level one requirements as well. So there are 110 requirements in the 800-171 standard. 17 of those are the level one requirements. Then when we start talking about level three, the DoD is in the process of building out a CMMC level three assessment guide as well. It hasn't been published yet, but it's under development. And we would expect that to be released sometime early enough to facilitate level three government assessments whenever the CMMC rule is finalized. But there are 24 additional requirements out there. If you work on critical weapons programs and need to start paying attention to those additional 24, you can reach out to me. You can read the blog post that I shared with you all that breaks out those requirements and where you can find more about those at level three.
Another question that was here is for companies already holding ISO 27001, do you see the transition to CMMC easier than from scratch?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that will be a much easier transition, especially if you're 27001, 2022. The 2013, actually, the 2013 version of that standard, NIST actually produced a mapping between it and the 800-171 Rev 2. But the 2022 version of ISO 27001 has a lot more requirements. And if you're meeting that, then there will be a lot of overlap between that and the requirements that CMMC will be assessing for, the NIST standard. The unfortunate thing is that there's no easy way to map between those two. There's not a one-to-one correlation. And really unfortunate thing is that the DoD is not recognizing any sort of reciprocity for meeting other industry accepted cybersecurity standards like ISO 27001. Understandably, the NIST standard is much more focused on the protection of certain types of DoD information. And so I understand the DoD's trepidation on allowing that sort of reciprocity, but it would have been nice if there was some sort of mapping that was provided. But it's going to be way easier than starting from scratch if you already have a 27001 certification.
Yeah. And since ISO was mentioned, actually, I recalled seeing in the Federal Acquisition Regulation in Part 46 there, they have these higher level contract requirements. And basically, they talk about examples of that, like the ISO and everything else like that. So again, this is where, you know, the FAR starts to talk about these higher level requirements, but then it says that agency shall establish the procedures when determining the higher level contract quality requirements, et cetera, specific to their contracts. And so that's why each agency and with those ones that maybe are not a DoD agency, not dealing with as much sensitive material, you might see different types of requirements than what's in the CMMC, if that's an accurate maybe assessment.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, each agency is independent.
So yeah, only really last question I think that we've got in the queue here. Oh, kind of two questions. The first is, can you repeat the NIST documents related to CMMC?
Yeah, so NIST 800-171, if you search for that term and look for the latest publications from NIST on those, you will see the requirements. Those are the requirements for the protection of controlled unclassified information, which is CMMC level 2, but they also include the requirements for CMMC level 1. And if you want a better breakdown between those two, if you go to the DoD's website, they have assessment guides for CMMC level 1, level 2 that reiterate those requirements that are published by NIST.
Last question. I see 787 comments were received by the DoD, but only 368 comments are posted. Why is that?
Let's see. Let me go there and just see. They have. I'm on the publication right now. I'm just seeing how many comments have been published.
Maybe they want to read them before they publish them.
They do. There's a vetting thing that they go through. Yeah. And like it took 10 days before my comment was posted, even after I submitted it.
Yeah.
So we got 787 comments submitted. If we go to that, how many have actually been posted? There's probably just a backlog between the review, the submission, and the public posting of these things. 368. Yeah. So I think they're just behind. The Pentagon's just behind in actually posting these things. Maybe some of them were duplicates, but eventually that number will catch up.
All righty. Awesome. Thanks, man. Well, that's all the questions that we've got for today, Adam. You know, again, thank you for partnering with us. We're grateful to have your partnership as well. And I'm excited to see what's in the level one training and take part in that as much as I can for myself. Because I know all of us really need to get up to speed with cybersecurity. This is just it's a really good formalized way to do it. Going back really quick to the COTS item, you also got to understand as a contractor that there's a lot of contractors that sell commercial off the shelf, but they also do other contracts, right? And every contract that you're going to do is going to be different. So ensure that, you know, you not just think, well, we just fill COTS items. Well, you got to read the solicitations and you never know what they're going to have in there. And so you want to make sure that you're picking those up and understanding it. If it's really something that is not required, go back to them and ask if they could take that particular requirement out. But anyway, here we are. So again, I want to encourage everyone, you want to join that CMMC Level 1 workshop with us. That's right on the Govology homepage, front and center with the ostrich with his head sticking in the dirt. So we got only a few weeks or so left if you want to get signed up for it. So please go and check that out. If you do sign up, we look forward to seeing you in the workshop. And I'm sure we'll be seeing you back again some point.
Next Groundhog Day.
Adam. All right. All right. Yeah. Thank you. Take care, Thanks. Everyone. Bye-bye.